You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. Good morning, I'm Luis Sainz, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is Dr. Sarah de los Santos Upton. Sarah is actually one of our former students. She was here from 2004 to 2008, so we are very proud of her. And she has recently been hired by our department, so congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, tell me a little bit about your history and your background as far as academics, because as you and I were discussing before, you went the quick academic route.
So I started at UTEP in 2004. And I majored in electronic media in the communication department. During that time, I became really interested in theory. So I took a lot of classes that were theory-based, and I decided to go for my master's degree. So after I finished at UTEP, I went to Georgetown University, and I studied communication, culture, and technology. And then I went to the University of New Mexico for my PhD, where I studied intercultural communication.
Tell us a little bit about intercultural communication, because some people may not have an idea of what that really means, and it really affects us here, especially living on the border.
Definitely. So intercultural communication means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It can be, you know, studying how do we have effective communication between people that have different value systems, different cultural backgrounds. It can look at how do we construct a sense of identity within our own culture? How do we draw on our multiple cultural identities to understand ourselves? So for me, I'm primarily interested in how intercultural communication happens in border spaces and how people understand place and sense of self when they're surrounded by multiple cultural symbols, multiple ways of viewing the world. So for me, intercultural communication is about borders.
Would you say that, because you just mentioned the world, that other nations, especially European nations, that border other countries have the same issues that they deal with? For one conference, we had people coming here from the Ukraine when the Soviet Union broke up, and a lot of those border states came here and were discussing some of the issues that they had.
I think that our border is very unique in some of the political issues that we face and the way that the border is framed in the rest of the U.S. But I do think that anybody, even if you don't live on a geographical border, I think that you encounter borders throughout your lived experience. So it could be maybe both sides of your family are from different cultural backgrounds. So there's kind of a symbolic border that you have to cross back and forth to understand your other family members. Or I know for a lot of students that I had at the University of New Mexico, Spanish was spoken in their homes, and they spoke English at school. So for them, there was this language border to cross every day. And I think that even for students that I had that have never encountered a geographic border, they could all identify some border in their personal lives that they've had to, you know, cross in symbolic ways.
As you mentioned language, we have a situation here where a student may have a Hispanic surname, but they can't speak Spanish. And that is something that they struggle with. Some of them, it doesn't really matter, but others really struggle with it because there are other Hispanics who may make fun of them or say, why don't you speak Spanish? Why don't you learn to speak Spanish? You're forgetting your roots, etc.
I know that I was one of those. The last name that I go by or that was on my records was always Upton, but I definitely identify as Latina, and I was not taught Spanish growing up because my mother would get in trouble for speaking Spanish in school. So I think that in my generation, there was kind of a stigma around our parents teaching us Spanish because they had encountered problems speaking Spanish in school and they didn't want to pass that on to us. So that's something that I've definitely, in my adult life, I've had to work at. I don't think that I'm perfectly fluent, but I think I'm much better with Spanish than I was even when I was a student here. I've been practicing and trying to get better at Spanish.
And what about looking at the other side of the coin, the other culture? Because we have a lot of Mexican national students who come here, and sometimes they struggle with the language because they're thinking in Spanish, and you can't really translate it literally all the time.
I definitely think, I know that for some people, Spanglish is not accepted. They prefer that each language be pure, but I really enjoy Spanglish. It's something that happens at borders that I think is very useful, because when you're mixing two languages, you can give context for some word that you can't translate in the language that you're trying to speak. So I think that it can be really useful for people who don't understand Spanish well enough or don't understand English well enough to still get their point across. You know, somebody who's predominantly Spanish speaking can still have effective communication with somebody who's predominantly English speaking.
What about when we're talking about, say, holidays, Dia de los Muertos, Cinco de Mayo? And I know that I was kind of criticized when I was growing up, too, because I didn't celebrate those holidays because I'm a fifth-generation American. And people say you need to acknowledge those holidays and you need to remember that.
What I think is really interesting about the border, and this is something that I've looked at in previous research during my PhD program, is I think that the border offers a lot of opportunity for people to create a cultural identity in a way that makes sense for them. So we have all of these different holidays that we can choose from. We have all of these different cultural practices we can choose from. We have two or more languages. And I think that because the border is an ambiguous place, it gives us room to say, this holiday is very meaningful for me. I'm going to celebrate it. Whereas I don't identify with this other holiday as much, so I don't feel the need to celebrate it. But I am sorry to hear that people were kind of pressuring you to celebrate holidays that you didn't identify with.
Now, in New Mexico, especially in northern New Mexico, they have, and it's a stereotype, I think, the fact that they identify themselves as Spaniards, Spanish, and Mexicans are looked down as, it's almost like the N-word, being a Mexican in some issues, in some certain parts of the state.
I definitely witnessed that. And I feel like in my experience, there seemed to be kind of a divide between Albuquerque and neighborhoods in Albuquerque that identified as Mexican or Mexican-American neighborhoods, where in Santa Fe, I saw, at least in my experience, that it was way more common to identify as Spanish. And I did see kind of a line of division between those two cultural identities that, you know, maybe share a similar background, but it, in my opinion, is socially constructed in a different way of identifying.
You mentioned earlier that we don't necessarily have to live on a border, that we've all encountered borders at some time in our life. Would you consider the stereotypical line that we hear in stories, the other side of the tracks, would that be a border?
Definitely. I think that that's a cultural border and a class border that a lot of people encounter. And, you know, maybe looking at it through a border framework can help their understanding of the situation in some way. But I definitely think that that is a border that a lot of people encounter.
And what about borders in between social groups, say, upper class, middle class, and poor?
Definitely. Students that I've had in the past will talk about, you know, being the first person in their family to go to college and how that creates this border between them and their family. Because in school, they're learning things, they're communicating in a particular way with their peers. But if they come home and they don't have some kind of code switching, if they speak the same way at home that they do in school, then it can be alienating for their family, or it can make them feel like they're not as much a part of their family anymore.
Sarah, tell us a little bit about what you bring to UTEP and what some of the classes you are going to teach.
In the fall, I'll be teaching an interpersonal communication class. I'll be co-teaching a communication theory class. And then I'm really excited to be developing a special topics course on border communication.
Explain border communication. And I know you have a little bit already.
In this class, we'll be looking at issues of identity and hybrid identity and how, you know, people construct their identity when they live in these in-between spaces. We'll be looking at how borders are rhetorically constructed in news media, the ways that people, you know, understand borders who don't live on borders. We'll be looking at theories like Gloria Antaldúa's theory on Borderlands La Frontera and how people create a tolerance for ambiguity when they live in these in-between spaces. So different topics like that are what will guide the course.
Now, when you talk about intrapersonal communication, and you just mentioned a little while ago about the code changing and the fact that people go to different situations, are in different situations, you and I here sitting having a conversation, except we have microphones in front of us, would be very different as if we were having a conversation at another table without microphones. And so my question is, if you could explain, I guess, Goffman's theory about backstage, front stage, back door, front door, and how we put on different personas when we are in different situations.
Definitely. When we're in different communication situations, some people talk about it as being like a mask that you put on or take off. So we draw on different symbols. We use different personal experiences in different situations to be able to successfully have interactions with other people.
How has being a student helped you in dealing with students and how you will deal with students now that you are a professor?
I think that I always try to think of what classes were the most meaningful for me, what classes gave opportunities for people who learn in multiple different ways. And I try to reflect on that and bring that into my teaching so that I can reach as many students with as many different learning styles as possible, so that I can make things interesting and make them an active participant in their learning rather than just sitting back and listening, you know, to me and what I have to say. I want them to really feel like they're contributing something to the learning that takes place in the class.
That's what I was going to ask you, is how do you think academia has changed over the years, where it was the traditional professor being up there, you know, pointing at the chalkboard? Some people may not even know what a chalkboard is nowadays, but the students were just students and just sat there and listened. And now there's a lot of interaction, and they realize that this professor is not just a professor. They have a life. They have a personality. They can be your friend, you know, even while they're in the classroom.
I've definitely seen that shift. You know, I've been in school for 10 years now. There were a lot of my courses that were lecture-based, and I learned well in that format. I thought it was interesting, but I know for some people it's not engaging, and it can be very easy to get distracted or not feel like a full participant in that type of classroom. And I've definitely seen, you know, since I started college in 2004 up until now, I've seen people approach the format of classes in all different types of ways. They'll have a very discussion-based class. They'll have classes where, you know, students are facilitating for a day, directing how the content is going to be presented, what's going to be covered in class. I've seen classes where the students get to pick some of the readings that are done, so that they have an active role in their learning. So I definitely think that there are a lot more possibilities for what you can do in a classroom now. And I think that that is helpful to students that learn in all kinds of different ways.
Social media has definitely helped that, correct?
Definitely. There are websites that, you know, look identical to Facebook, but there are discussion posts taking place on them, and people are using a wall for an academic purpose, to communicate with friends in the class, which I think is really interesting.
Well, Sarah, thank you very much for taking time to be with us here today. We've been visiting with Dr. Sarah de los Santos Upton, who is our newest member of the communication group here as a professor who will be starting here in the fall. And she's also one of our former students. Thank you very much for being with us here, and congratulations.
Thank you for having me.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Pat Petrowski. Our producer is Dennis Rue. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Sines.